You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is Gilbert Gottfried, and I'm here with my co-host Frank Santopadre, and this is Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions. We're once again recording at Nutmeg with our engineer, Frank Verderosa.
Thank you, Frankie.
Colossal Obsessions.
Our guest this week has been on the show before.
He has.
He's the president of the Jim Henson Legacy, Craig Shemin.
And I'm happy to be back by popular demand.
Yes, you are back by popular demand.
Which is fun
demand.
Because the first episode hasn't been dropped yet, as they say.
Oh, I like that. That's very professional.
Yeah.
Yes, I reminded, so he didn't say Shemin when I wrote it down for him. I said Shemin as in Shemp. So we did a Muppet episode previously.
We did.
And we talked about everything. We talked about the origins of the Muppets. We talked about the old days. We talked about how Jim got to Sesame Street.
Did we talk about the nightclub that Jim wanted to open?
We did not talk about the nightclub.
That was fun. That was
fill us in.
Yeah, Jim wanted to open up a nightclub in the 1960s called Cyclia. And he wanted to have one of these inflatable things like they had the tennis courts in, and he wanted to project film on dancing girls mm-hmm. and things, and they
well,
actually
very laughing.
Oh yeah, they shot film on it. They actually got permission to shoot the screaming girls at a Beatles concert in Shea Stadium. They couldn't shoot the Beatles, but they were allowed to shoot the screaming girls, and they shot off the back of motorcycles, the bright lights of the city, and they put together the film. But at the end, they couldn't, you know, actually do the nightclub because you had to do business with certain people in the 60s to do a sort of nightclub in New York.
That's interesting.
And I forgot your answer, or maybe I just wasn't paying attention. was Henson, was he one of those people who believed that, because I asked you this a lot, that believed that he was against medicine and medical treatment?
No. He grew up in a Christian Science family, but he had doctors, and he was not, I think he didn't go to the doctor a lot because he didn't get sick. So he didn't, you know, when he did die, he didn't think he was as sick as he was.
Oh.
And that was the thing. He was always working when he was sick.
He was a workaholic.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll be asking again later.
That's
in the
okay.
show.
This is going to shock you. Gilbert's actually a Christian Scientist.
Yes.
Well, only one of those two things, Nolan, would shock me, actually.
Right, actually,
the
neither
scientist,
of them are true.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, they gave me a special membership. they were doing that one Jew only.
it was a quota system.
So we've actually had a lot of requests from listeners, you know, do a Muppet show. We ran out of time last time. There's so much to get to.
Yeah, so we were just about to get into the Muppet show, the actual meat of that.
Yes. Yeah, so tell us, this I find interesting, an ex-podcast guest was involved in the show originally.
And George Schlatter.
George Schlatter. Do you know that, Gil?
He was...
Was this around the Ed Sullivan days?
Or? No, this was in the very early 70s.
Wow. 70s.
George Schlatter and Jim were going to produce the show together, and if you go to YouTube or on one of the DVD sets of The Muppet Show, you could see this sales film that they put together where you could see the sensibilities of both Jim and George Schlatter combined, because they were saying things like, you know, we're all going to be temperamental and hard to work with, but you won't mind because we're going to be making lots of money.
Interesting. That's an interesting pairing. Because George had the laugh-in pedigree at that point, and of course, turn-on.
Yeah, that was mentioned.
Gosh.
That was mentioned in the promotional video.
Tim Conway.
Yeah.
But
we've talked about that before.
And George was sort of not part of it anymore by the time it became an actual thing.
Lord Lou Grade.
Lord Lou Grade.
Yeah. Got
he
involved.
Was, I think, Sir Lou Grade at the time.
Sir Lou Grade.
I think the Muppets helped make him a lord.
So what happened? So was UK money came into the picture?
Yeah. What happened? They did a couple of half-hour specials for ABC when Michael Eisner was running the children's TV department.
Mm-hmm.
So they did the Muppets Valentine Show and they did the Muppet Show Sex and Violence, which was the title of it. And these were half-hour shows to try and show how the Muppets would be on prime time. And ABC didn't buy it. CBS, they tried to sell it to CBS, and they didn't buy it on the network level. And in the middle of all that, Lou Grade came with an offer. He had ITC, syndication company, and ATV in England. And he came with an offer to produce 24 episodes, a full season, with the only condition that they do it in London, where he had a working studio. So he gave him a very generous budget. So the Muppets all went to England for the beginning of the Muppet Show.
You know, I got a flashback because we were talking about laughing.
Yeah.
Just recently, I was out of town, and on one of the channels, they had an episode of Laughing. It had Rowan and Martin, but the only recognizable cast member was Ruth Buzzi.
Really?
There was no Henry Winkler, no Audie Johnson.
Oh, Henry Gibson, you mean.
Oh, Henry Winkler.
Henry I would have enjoyed
Gibson.
Henry Winkler.
They tried to get Henry Winkler.
Yeah, yeah, there was no Henry Winkler. No, I say it twice. There was no Henry Gibson.
Yep.
No Henry Gibson, no Audie Johnson. No Goldie Hawn.
What version
no
of Laughing was
they did a whole season, like the last season after George Schlatter left, and they brought in Willie Tyler and Lester,
right.
And Judd Strunk.
Judd Strunk, correct? Who was a one-hit wonder?
They were on this.
That was Tyler. After George Schlatter left, but Ruthie stayed on.
Ruth Buzzi was the only one. So Alan Seuss was gone, and Gibson,
Alan Seuss occasionally would dress up as Joanne Worley.
Even Johnny Brown.
Johnny
wasn't
Brown
there.
Is still around, by the way.
We got to get him on this show. No rush.
He's in the green room.
Bookman.
Yeah, but just let's take our time on it.
Okay, so Lord Lou Grade, Sir Lou Grade at the time, gets involved.
Yeah.
The deal is that Jim has to take the Muppets overseas,
right,
to do the Muppet Show.
And Jim was hesitant at first because he wanted a network, and this was going to be one of the first major original syndication shows. They had just turned that half hour of prime time over to local stations, so the local stations were looking for stuff.
Right.
They couldn't put on network reruns, so a lot of it was going to be game shows or whatever. So this was the chance to do whatever.
And the famous variety producing team of Smith and Hemian.
Smith and Hemian were around as consultants for the first few shows.
Yeah, and they had done everything.
They had done everything, and they actually went way back with Jim because I think at least Gary Smith worked on Steve Allen Show when Jim and Jane Henson were doing the Steve Allen Show.
Uh-huh.
And what was funny is that they always saw Jim as, you know, the college student. You know, I heard later on when they were doing award shows into the 80s and Jim would go do an appearance, they were like, oh, Jimmy, bring the puppets over. You know, and they never quite saw him as the legend that everyone else did. He was just the college kid who had
the
dog wiggling.
And who was the head writer on the first season? Gilbert will get a kick out of this.
Jack Burns.
Oh, my God.
Jack Burns was the head writer on the first season of The Muppet Show.
Wow.
And they got Avery Schreiber to come on as a guest for the first season.
Yeah. Well, now they weren't Burns and Schreiber anymore at that point.
They were not, but, you know, you look out for your friends.
Of course.
And Avery. And you actually, it was very important to bring on the friends because you had to fly to England to do the show. You couldn't just drive to Television City. So people were, you know, had to make a big trip. So they called in a lot of friends. So Avery was one of those friends they called in.
Right. Jack Burns, you know, and people think of him as Burns and Schreiber, or they think of him as taking over for Don Knotts on the Andy Griffith Show. But he had a writing career. He was the head writer of Fridays, which people forget.
Yeah, and he was in charge of the whole production on Fridays.
And still around.
Oh.
Jack Burns.
But okay, Kelly, when we've
keeps
got
to
time.
Himself a lot.
Well, Kelly Carlin stays in touch with him because they used to be Burns and Carlin.
Oh, my God. That's right.
A million
that's
years
right.
ago. And we asked Kelly when we had her on the show, and she says he's really a recluse. He won't do anything.
Well, he always
he won't
liked
answer
to,
the phone.
You know, he didn't like to engage in a lot of with a lot of people because Jerry Jewell, who became head writer of The Muppet Show the following year, told me a story that Jack Burns had gone to dinner once, and he's waiting for his table at dinner, and someone comes up to him and says, "Are you Jack Burns?" And he didn't feel like engaging with the fan. So he said, "No, I'm not. I get that a lot. I'm not Jack Burns, but thank you." So later on, he gets to the table, and he finds himself seated next to that person.
Oh.
And that person spends the entire dinner talking about how much he can't stand Jack Burns.
Oh, my God.
And he's sitting there. He can't do anything because he said, "I'm not Jack Burns."
Perfect.
So he just had to sit and endure an entire dinner of hearing about how awful he was.
Funny guy.
I remember Burns and Schreiber because they would go on and do the same act on every show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where they'd sit in two chairs.
They'd do the taxi. Yeah.
Schreiber would be like the sad sack cab driver, and he being a loudmouth, yeah.
And to show you how Jim took care of his own people, Jim worked with Burns and Schreiber in the 60s on a summer replacement show that Ed Sullivan's company produced.
Good Lord.
Rolf was the host, and Burns and Schreiber were the act, so he kept up with them. And
used the same people.
Yeah.
And I remember, because they would do this a lot, where they would get an act that had their one act and try to stretch it out.
Yeah.
So they would start doing, they'd do these new sketches that it was like the cab driver during the Civil War time. The cab driver in the future. The cab driver in prehistoric days.
You know what's funny? You think of that is so old school comedy. Comedy teams. It's just not, it just doesn't exist. Remember Patchett and Tarsus?
Yeah.
You remember them?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tom Patchett and Jay Tarsus. So Jay Tarsus went on to create Buffalo Bill for Dabney Coleman and a lot of good television.
I wonder who were the last of the comedy team.
I think it's you guys.
That's just sad. We had Tom Bergeron in here before, and he was talking about Shields and Yarnell. Do they qualify even as a comedy team?
Well, they're a team.
Yeah.
No, they did the Muppet Show, I think.
Comedy teams. If you turned on TV in the 60s, you had your run of comedy duos, and it just doesn't exist anymore.
No, it doesn't.
Someone said you and Gilbert are the Mac and Jamie of do you remember them?
Yep.
of the millennial. Oh my God! Back to the Muppets.
So they're out in London. They're doing this thing. They're schlepping guest stars in every week. And they had the time of their lives. They loved doing it. And
this list you gave me of guest stars from the first season of The Muppet Show, all of these people flew to London
to do
the show.
They were being put up first class.
Jesus, what a list.
You know, it was a high-class operation. And they had to just do the work wasn't that hard. You did a day of script read-through, a day of music recording, and the guest stars were only in the studio for one day to shoot. And then the Muppets stayed around to do another 2 days the rest of the episode. But they would always shoot out the guest star after one day.
Yeah.
So it's not a lot of work.
But to have to fly overseas just for a...
Well, that was the 70s.
Vincent Price, I remember. He was episode 19.
Vincent Price.
Did you watch The Muppet Show?
Oh, yeah.
In first run?
What was wonderful about the show is that they would always try and get people to do what they weren't known for. So Vincent Price actually sings "You've Got a Friend."
I've seen that clip. Yeah.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
And now back to the show.
I flew to England recently. I did that Matt LeBlanc show.
Episodes.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. You didn't tell me you went all the way overseas
to
do that.
Well, I don't like talking.
I know that. How was it? They put you up first class?
That was all of that's great.
It's a long flight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the jet lag.
Yeah.
I mean, like in the middle of the day, I remember talking to someone in the middle of the day and say, you know how 2 days ago you were telling me, And he goes, it wasn't 2 days ago. It was this morning.
Oh, man.
So I was lost over there.
But you would have gone over for the Muppet Show for...
absolutely. Yeah.
He would have been great. They would have let him sing.
Yeah.
I'm sure. So everybody loved Roy Rogers and Edgar Bergen.
They loved Roy Rogers, Edgar Bergen. Roy Rogers, someone told me a story that Roy would come down and he would talk to them. And he said, you know what I love to do? You know, at that time, he was like living over the Roy Rogers Museum. And Roy would tell him, you know, every morning I get to go down to the museum and play Roy Rogers.
Wow.
It's like I get to be Roy
Rogers.
That's
fun.
And Edgar Bergen, they told me when they did their script read through and then they sat around and took pictures. They just set up a little semicircle and Edgar did his act for the whole crew.
That's very cool.
Just for fun.
That's very cool.
Now, see, and this is something, because Edgar Bergen, everybody loved Edgar Bergen, and he's a legend.
Yep.
But is he the worst ventriloquist who ever lived?
Well, let's just say there's a reason that his greatest success was on radio.
Yeah. Yes. It was so insane, a ventriloquist on radio.
Who didn't translate to television.
No.
Right.
No. And it's like when you'd see it, and you'd be watching him. And his mouth would be moving all over the place.
But Jim became very close to him, and both Candace. Candace had done the Muppet Show, too. And when Edgar died, they asked Jim to deliver the eulogy. And in Jim's office for many years was this silver picture frame that the Bergen family gave him. It said, Jim, keep the magic alive, and with a picture of Edgar in it with Kermit, I think.
You ever seen that creepy photo of the newborn Candace Bergen and she's in a bassinet and they've got the puppet looking like it's her brother and somebody wrapped the puppet's fingers around the edge. It's disturbing.
What's even creepier, if you look at some of Edgar's early movies.
Charlie McCarthy. Yeah.
If you look at some of Edgar Bergen's earlier movies, in some of the scenes they would put a little person in a Charlie McCarthy costume and have him walking around. In the film, and that's a little disturbing.
Oh, I think they one time did that with both of them, both Edgar and Mortimer Snurd.
Oh yeah,
on the Jack Benny show.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
You don't see comedy teams anymore. You don't see ventriloquists anymore.
No, not so much.
Paul Winchell has come and gone,
and you don't see mimics anymore.
No, you don't see mimics. Well, we've had a lot on this show. We had John Biner. We had Marilyn Michaels.
You had Rich Little. Didn't
we had Rich Little, and Will Jordan. But it's also a dying art.
Yeah.
I mean, this show is like, you know, it's a time capsule.
Well, what's
we're bringing
fun
these
is you
back.
Look at the Muppet Show list, it's a lot of all different kinds.
Yeah, I love this
entertainers.
List.
You had, they would get variety people like Señor Wences did the Muppet Show.
Yeah. Oh,
it's
wow.
A great list.
One of my favorite ones was Wally Bogue, who did the Golden Horseshoe Review at Disneyland for years and years. And he basically did that same show over and over. And he did part of that in the Muppet Show.
Wally Bogue, I don't know. Do you know that name, Gil?
No.
Listen to some of these people. Don Knotts, Zero Mostel, Uncle Milty, Rich Little, Edgar Bergen, Steve Martin, George Burns. Oh, now Craig tells us he has a little note here that most of the guest stars were loved by the team, but not everyone. And he says, see if you can guess from the attached list who was not pleasant. So I'm going to stereotype the French, and I'm going to say that it was Charles Aznavour.
No. I will say it's someone that's been mentioned on this show.
Wait. I'm going to say, because his own son insulted him, that's Zero Mostel.
You know, he may have not been, but that's not the story I hear.
Okay, wait a minute now. Let's see. Let's see if we can guess. Here, Gil, take a guess from this list. Pearl Bailey, Roy Clark, Chris Christopherson, James Coco, Danny Kaye. Was it Danny Kaye?
Oh my God!
Well, you know, I don't like to tell tales out of school, but yes,
how did I not guess that first?
That was one person that I heard not so great things about.
I've heard nothing but bad things about him. George Carlin hated him.
Yeah.
Tony Curtis hated him.
I don't think Bernie Coppell liked him very much. Yes, we had him on.
Oh, everybody hated Danny.
And Jamie Farr didn't care for him.
Well,
man, he likes everybody.
And I will say that the people who work on the Muppets generally like everybody too. So for them to say things that are less than positive.
You realize I was fired by the Muppets, Craig.
Well, I was too, so there's a lot of that. You're in good company. It just took longer for me.
Are we near the clip yet?
Yes,
should we set up the clip?
I'm going to set up the clip. We have a very rare clip that comes to us from the courtesy of Joe Bailey, who is one of the writers of The Muppet Show. And he has a book that's out, Memoirs of a Muppet Writer. And he's a swell guy. And what I love about this clip is that Jim always wanted people to do things they weren't known for. So Phyllis Diller played the saxophone and Hal Linden played the clarinet, I think.
Mm-hmm.
C-3PO tap danced on The Muppet Show. That I mean,
okay.
So he wanted people to do that. But Milton Berle is a guy who not only wanted to do the same type of thing he always wanted to do, he wanted to do it exactly the same. So he would come in. They were doing a heckling routine with Statler and Waldorf, the two old guys in the balcony. And Milton knew exactly the jokes he wanted. So he brought like a stack of jokes that he'd been using since the beginning of time and essentially dictated it to the writers. And so what you're going to hear is the writer's room with Milton Berle telling everybody what jokes that he thought would be good in this routine.
Okay.
So this is the heckling.
Here's Uncle Milty.
I'll say S or W. Start again. Berle, if you don't stop heckling me, I'll have the usher take you out. Joe, I don't go out with ushers. I got a good mind of punching the nose. Waldorf, please, not while I'm holding it. Do you have anything else to say about me? Only one thing, that you stand too close to the camera. Berle, how far would you like me to be?
That's funny.
Waldorf, you got a car?
I like that.
That's a nice line.
If you keep cutting me off, how's anybody know what I'm going to say by watching Bob Hope the week before? That's a great joke. Now, would you please be quiet? Did you come in here to be entertained or not? That's right. What's right? I came here to be entertained, and I'm not. That's the first show, kind of. That should be up early. Oh, I'd like to see you get up here and be funny. He says, you first. I dare you, wise guy. Why don't you come down here on the stage and entertain? So I should. Can you sing? No. Can you dance? No. Can you get laughs? No. And what can you do? Just what you're doing. Well, you got a million jokes here. Now, this is a very big joke. I don't know if you can get it. All right, gentlemen. I'll bet either one of you can't name one man who's funnier than me. There's Bob Hope, George Burns, Red Skelton. I say, see, I told you couldn't name one. You stay up there and try to be funny, all right? I know a good joke. Watch, then we can't do this.
Whoa.
Jesus Christ.
We only got a half hour show.
I know. This has got to be 2:30, 2:40.
That's right.
That's right.
That's exactly it.
I know. I just this one and then forget because I've got to be on a set in June.
Yeah, right.
From your information, I did very well in all the three mediums. Stop exaggerating. So I'm only human. There you go, exaggerating.
That's a little bit of
Yeah, that voice you heard at the end was Jerry Jewell telling we only have a half hour.
Who was the poor guy that had to sit there going, that's funny?
That was probably all of the writers.
God.
And this is just a snippet.
Thank you, Frank.
The only we have like 20 minutes of that tape, and that's only part of the meeting, but it was basically—
Yeah, we went out on a clip last time.
That's so funny, because that's one of those stories that I tell on this show, but to actually hear it is amazing.
What,
to
that
me.
He's just
going— Yeah, when it actually, a story like that comes to life.
I know. It's weird the way he's just kind of dictating exactly what he's going to do word for word.
You can hear the typewriter in the background trying to take
And you want to laugh at him, but at the same time, part of you is thinking, this guy's an old pro. He knows what he's doing.
And there's another section.
Maybe they should listen to him.
Yeah, well, they do. A lot of that's, you know, word for word what they end up doing. But there is a section of the tape where he says a joke and he says, oh, no, that's brand new. Like that, you know, he wasn't comfortable with it because he never tested it before.
Wow. That's a fun little thing to have.
I heard a story that with Abbott and Costello on their TV show, they would like fight doing a bit that was written for them. And the way to get them to do it was they'd say, oh, I was at a vaudeville house the other day. I saw this comic do it. I got it down word for word. He got big laughs. And then Abbott and Costello would do it.
This is some guest list. Some of these people I don't recognize. I guess they're European stars. Tony Randall, Mac Davis, Hal Linden. Of course, I'm looking for the people that did this show. Rich Little, Senior Wenceslas Gill, Mumenschantz.
Mumenschantz.
Oh, my God.
Loretta Swit, Diane Cannon, Victor Borga, Shields and Yarnell, we just talked about with Tom. Doug Henning.
Yep, Doug Henning.
The late Doug Henning.
So you had, like, they did 120 shows, 5 years, and then Jim decided to pull the plug.
How come?
He was always the guy who wanted to do the next thing. So he was starting to do work on these fantasy films, Dark Crystal, and he.
Oh, that's right.
They had started doing the feature films where they took the Muppets out into the real
Fraggle
world.
Fraggle Rock
was following this. So he was a guy. They could have kept going for another few years, but he was a guy who always wanted to do the next thing. So that's.
And then there were attempts to revive the Muppet Show because
it
was so loved.
They did a
so
few
loved.
Times. You know, they tried with the Jim Henson Hour.
How long did the Jim Henson Hour last?
Half a season.
Okay. And were they the same? I'm trying to remember them. Were they the same formats? Because I remember the Muppet Show proper that
right.
everybody
what
remembers.
What they did with they always tried to update it. So on the Jim Henson Hour, instead of a music hall type of setting, the Jim Henson Hour had what they called Muppet Television, which was like this futuristic control room where Kermit could pull up anything on a screen. So they always go in and out of screens. So Kermit was still the host, but Frank Oz wasn't working on all the shows.
Right.
So that suffered.
When he was developing a feature career.
Yeah, yeah.
Too, Frank
yeah.
Oz.
He had, by then, he had started directing features. So he would come every once in a while and they would do a special or you know, that he would do every, you know, third or fourth episode. But without that team of Jim and Frank working together. You did Muppets Tonight.
Oh, yeah. It's
Muppets
here on the list.
Tonight.
Muppets
yeah.
Tonight.
Yeah.
And that was interesting because that was done just a year or two after Jim died. So they didn't feel comfortable with putting Kermit at the center of the show. So they had the show hosted by Clifford, who was one of the newer characters, and he was sort of the new hip character. But they had to sort of make him less hip to front the show. See, he was sort of the hip musician in the band who didn't have eyes because he had sunglasses covering his eyes. So first thing they do was give him eyes, and suddenly he's less cool and less mysterious. And he starts talking a lot because he has to host the show. And one of the things that made Clifford cool was that he would just talk every now and then and have these really cool little zingers and then, take his place in the band. So that it was interesting. And I think one of the problems is that they were on ABC.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like when they were syndicated on The Muppet Show. Unlike Jim Henson Hour, which was on NBC, and Muppets Tonight on ABC, they had 24 episodes they knew they were going to be doing. So they could experiment and they could have fun. And it wasn't until like the second season of The Muppet Show where it really hit its stride.
Did you enjoy doing it, Gil?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was on the Win a Date with Kermit.
We played it on the last episode.
Yeah. And that it was a lot of fun. There was a lot of fun stuff in that show. But, you know, there's so much pressure on network television. It's even gotten, you know, more like that now.
I remember Kermit has to go to the address of the winner. And you see on the bell, it says Gottfried. And this cute girl answers the bell. And he goes, oh, well, hello, Mrs. Gottfried. And she goes, oh, you're here to see my friend Gilbert Gottfried.
And then you're having the romantic dinner.
Yes.
And then the last version was The Muppets.
That was just a couple of years ago.
The recent one.
Bill Prady, who I worked with.
Funny guy, Bill Prady.
Very funny guy. And, it, you know, they just made a little bit of a
That was the sort
misstep.
Of the behind the scenes.
Yeah,
it was going to be almost like a Larry Sanders show.
Exactly.
But
they gave
the
Muppets
of Muppet
all
show.
Of these real problems. And, you know, I don't think people want to watch the Muppets deal with real problems. They want to watch it to sort of, you know.
And yet they're durable. They're durable characters.
And they're still going to do stuff. You know,
what struck me about the one I was in, and he's going, oh, Mrs. Gottfried, is whenever I'd watch that, I go, so does this frog want to fuck this girl? Is that what the Muppets are pushing here?
What Kermit does on his own time.
It's just Kermit's business.
Yeah, and amphibious sex.
I mean, he spends a lot of time with a pig, so anything would be.
So I figured this is the next step.
Before we do the plugs, and I know you got an event coming.
We do. We're opening up a new exhibit of Jim Henson's work at the Museum of the Moving Image. It opens July 22nd.
Wonderful.
So
where you met Gilbert.
Where I met Gilbert.
The first
yes.
time.
Wow.
And Gil, he's got a little game for us.
Yeah, we're going to go
take
out on
us
a game.
Quickly.
This is called Man or Muppet.
Ooh.
And it's inspired from a song from one of the more recent movies. And I'm going to give you a name. You have to tell me if it's a real person or an obscure Muppet character.
Uh-oh.
You cannot stump the great Gottfried.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
All right, let's see what you got.
Big, tiny, tall saddle. Big, tiny, tall saddle.
I'm going to say that's a real person.
No, that's a Muppet.
Wow. That was it. Okay.
Oh, for what?
So we're off to a bad start.
He was a disc jockey on the Johnny Cash episode of The Muppet Show.
Oh, wow. Oh, so you took, you took real characters from that.
Merwin Bogue. Merwin Bogue.
I feel like this is that episode of Hollywood Squares. You
fool!
No relation to Wally Bogue?
No.
I'm going to say real person.
It is. That's actually Ishka Bibble's real name.
Ishka Bibble.
Ishka, do you know when I was a little kid?
Ishka Bibble.
When I was a little kid, one time I got a haircut. I must have been about 3 years old. And to this day, I remember some guy looking at me, a grown man, goes, "Oh, you look like Ishka Bibble."
If any of our listeners know who Ishka Bibble is, I'll be really impressed. Look it up.
And
the problem is I've played this game with other people and actually had to take names out of it that I knew you guys would know.
Of course.
But let's see. There's Bessie Lamb.
Gil? Bessie Lamb.
See, I think this is a trick. Because you'll hear lamb and you'll assume it's a puppet. So I'm going to say it's a real person.
It is, yes.
Look, you're on a roll. You're flying.
She was a singer from the early 1900s. Zuzu Fitzwaller.
You know, Zazu Pitts could be a Muppet.
Zuzu Fitzwaller.
Fitzwaller.
I'm gonna say a person again.
No, that was a Muppet.
Well, that's what I meant. I was going to say.
A Hungarian water juggler from the Muppet Show.
It was a person, but then I stopped myself and said it was indeed a puppet.
Okay, one more. go out with a bang. Pick your best one.
Imogen Poots. Imogen Poots.
Oh, I've got this one.
Okay.
Imogen Poots is a real person. She's an actress.
Yes.
I think we had her on The View.
Well, she'll have to come on this show.
Imogen Poots. That's a great name.
Yeah, it just sounded like a Muppet.
Yeah, fantastic. That was fun. So give us the plug again and plug your book, too.
A Muppet's Character Encyclopedia.
By Craig Shemin.
Craig Shemin, available wherever books are sold. And I also mention Joe Bailey's book. Memoirs of a Muppet Writer.
Joe, thank you for the clip.
And also I want to mention, if you want to know more about Jim, you can check out Jim Henson, the biography by Brian J. Jones, or Imagination Illustrated, the Jim Henson Journal by Karen Falk, or a really good kids biography, I Am Jim Henson by Brad Meltzer, illustrated by Chris Iliopoulos. They're all nice people.
Look, he brought all his plugs. This is a professional guest.
And the exhibit opens July 22nd at the Museum of the Moving Image.
Gilbert will come. He'll take
it's
the kids.
It's permanent, and there's a touring version of it in Seattle right now.
Wonderful.
Now, before you go, I heard that Jim Henson didn't follow medical thing.
I heard Imogen Poots was a
you know, that's right.
Son. Yeah. You're funny. Thank you, Craig.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
You'll come back sometime and we'll talk Muppet movies.
We'll do Muppet movies. We can do game shows. We can do
all sorts
of stuff.
Man, there's no end.
We've been talking to Craig Shemin.
Slavin.
Shemin. We're talking to Craig Shemin.
You know, I'm looking at Frank Verderosa and he's just sitting there like this. Like you've completely deadened his senses.
Because he doesn't have headphones on.
That's because...
Also, I know I'll be dialing that down when I mix it. I'm used to it.
That's because he's accidentally erasing all these shows as he records them.
That's later I do that.
Frank Verderosa rescues these shows. Thank you, Mr. Shemin.
It was
great to give our love to Stephanie.
I sure will.
And this has been Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions. Gilbert and Frank's Colossal Obsessions.
sessions.